It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Hello. Welcome. It is September 9th, 2020, and it is time for News to Me. I'm Marcus, and we're going to go through a bunch of stories. I've got a lot of international headlines for you, but just like yesterday, I have to manually sync my bookmarks, so it'll take just 1 second here. Today is the 9th. Click on the menu. Click on your profile. Sync now. Control-Shift-O to open bookmarks. And then open all in tabs. All right. Now, what we've got going on today is there's a lot of news. So I'll probably talk a little quick. I've got my ginger tea with me. And oh, buddy, I freaking love a good, real strong ginger tea. So, and greetings to Calm. X1 and Zeppy and SMJ are all in. So probably Jazzmaz too. So. If you are out there and you're listening, but not in comm, you're missing out. And as always, I like to tell people how to join. You just SSH over to SDF, and you type COM for comm, hit enter. And then from there, you press G for go to, and then type anon radio in all lowercase letters, all squished together, hit enter, and you are in the room. And I'm there too, so come check it out. Calm is an interesting chat experience, unlike other offerings that exist. So let's go through. India tops our headlines. We can't forget our friend.
World news.
That's right. We've got some low-budget sound effects here. So first up, India, coronavirus. There are rumors hampering testing in Punjab. So wild rumors about coronavirus are fueling opposition to testing in the northern Indian states of Punjab, reports BBC's Punjabi Arvind Chabra. Human organs are being smuggled, Sonia Kaur, who lives in a village in Punjab Sangur district, tells the BBC. Not just the villages, but the whole world is scared of this. Social media is full of such news. Ms. Kaur says she had heard of people's organs being harvested under the guise of diagnosing and treating the virus. She echoed the fears of countless others in rural Punjab who were skeptical of the virus. Rumors are flying fast that the virus is a hoax, that people who don't have COVID-19 are being taken away, where they are being killed for their organs, and the bodies are being swapped to allay suspicion. Mix of fear, anxiety, and easy access to social media, especially WhatsApp, has hastened the spread of these baseless rumors in the form of messages and doctored videos. This has led to protests and even attacks against healthcare workers. Ms. Kaur's village was one of several in Sangur that did not allow health workers to collect samples for testing. Crowds pelted them with stones, screaming, "Go back, we don't want to be tested." The government's already circulating videos aimed at quelling fears and dispelling misinformation. So, COVID tests are rising fast. The chart is pretty much a straight-up line, where they have, in July, they were well under 500, and at the start of September, they're well past 1,500 in reported cases. And then as far as deaths, they went from under 10 to well over 60. So, very dangerous time. Lots of people are against it. You can check out this story on the BBC. Our friends at the World Socialist website also cover this kind of dangerous stuff going on in India with the headline, "India now second only to U.S. in number of COVID-19 cases, yet continues to expand reopening." So after recording over 90,000 new infections on Monday, India surpassed Brazil as the country with the second highest number of COVID-19 cases in the world. Despite the calamitous situation, which includes approximately 1,000 daily deaths, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his far-right Bharatiya Janata Party, BJP, and the various state governments are pushing ahead with the reopening of the economy. This includes the state governments led or supported by the opposition Congress Party. No, they don't say who profits or wins. I think that nobody wins. Whenever we're talking about people getting hurt or people like suffering because of this. It's just people who are afraid. And so they're trying to avoid. They're afraid. And so they're afraid and they're trying to convince other people to also be afraid. It's kind of the source of a lot of misinformation. We go back to the BBC. A Chechen teen was tortured in a humiliating video. And they treat this very delicately because it's pretty disturbing. So if you are sensitive to abuse or stories about sexual abuse, tune out for a second. Well, about a minute or two. So a video of a teenager appearing to be tortured and apologizing for criticizing the Chechen government on social media has emerged online. In the video, which has been condemned by activists, the man's forced to perform a humiliating act. He identifies himself as the 19-year-old administrator of a social media channel that criticized Chechnya's leader, Ramzan Kadyrov. Mr. Kadyrov is accused of overseeing rights abuses in the Russian Republic. The ally of Russia's President Putin denies that his government detains and tortures critics who speak out publicly against the regime. But human rights groups say victims are punished and tortured until they post apologies online. So here comes the disturbing part. Okay, in the video clip, a naked young man kneeling down apologizes in Chechen for criticizing Mr. Kadyrov's regime and says he's an administrator of a channel and messaging app Telegram that called 1ADAT, which he denounces. He's in significant distress, says he wants to punish himself, and then performs a humiliating act with a bottle. He says his name is Salman Tepsurakayev. 1ADAT, which is run by Chechen nationals in Russia and elsewhere in Europe, confirmed that Mr. Tepsukuriev had been involved with their channel but said he had only been a moderator. Posts in the group criticized Mr. Kadyrov's authoritarian government as well as Mr. Putin. So, this is pretty horrible and a scary thing. So, anyway, this is sad news coming out of Chechnya. And now we're moving a little bit further along. We're moving around. Now we're going to look at the Middle East and get over to Israel. Will Morocco normalize relations with Israel? So at fairobserver.com, you can check this story out. The North commentators from major news outlets have commented that Morocco will be among the first Arab countries to normalize relations with Israel and exchange ambassadors following the Israeli-Emirati agreement. As the former U.S. ambassador to Morocco, and having closely followed the policies and opinions of King Mohammed VI for the past 20 years, I'm not so sure that Morocco will be next. There are two overriding issues to consider in this regard. King Mohammed VI has consistently and strongly supported a peace agreement between Israel and Palestine, and he may see a Moroccan agreement with Israel as damaging to such prospects. Also, the timing to act now, during an election year in the U.S., may be a deterrent for Morocco to move too hastily. calm is always good for a laugh or a pick-me-up, man. oh, jeepers. What else is happening? Oh, we were in the middle of talking about international politics. The king has made his viewpoint clear over the past two decades with regards to Palestine and used his position as chairman of Al-Quds Jerusalem Committee on the Organization of Islamic Conference, OIC, to assert strong support for Palestinian state. At the same time, he's expressed his support for warm and full relations with Israel and seems perfectly situated as the next peace partner with Israel, given the fact that Moroccans are the second largest ethnic group in Israel after Russians. So, it's a very complicated thing. So, you're going to want to read the whole story if you want to get a grasp on it. But I wanted to point this out because this is written by a guy who was involved deeply and has a great understanding of the politics in the area.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right, and tonight on the Vintage Computer Show, we've got part one of a multi-part interview with Al Alcorn, the creator of Pong. It's just over 40 minutes and ends with an interesting Steve Jobs cliffhanger. So be sure to tune in. Tonight, I think it's at 2100. Hold on. I don't have the time on my promo. Let's just go to anonradio.net. Hit schedule. All right. It is at 0200 on, so that's 0200 UTC Thursday. which, yeah, and that's good enough. Just look at, you can check out the schedule at anonradio.net, and it is right there in the 0200 block for Thursday to get more information. So check it out. All right, let's keep on going with our international, or sorry, now it's time. Well, yeah, we've still got tons of international news. I just got to scroll. We'll just do a couple headlines because this has gone long. Boris Johnson is defending a Brexit bill that would breach the EU withdrawal treaty that they made. France and Germany vowed to maintain a united front in talks with Britain as the UK unveiled its new Brexit bill a day after admitting that might be violating international law with its EU withdrawal treaty. So keep an eye on that. Boris Johnson making moves and possibly getting in some hot water. Also really hot, Moira migrant fire destroys a Greek camp, leaving 13,000 without shelter. Fires have destroyed Greece's largest migrant camp, an overcrowded facility on the island of Lesbos, leaving nearly 13,000 people without shelter. Some 40 firefighters battled the blaze at the Moira camp, designed for fewer than 3,000 people, as migrants, many suffering from smoke exposure, fled. Greece's migration minister said the fires began with the asylum seekers, but did not elaborate. Police blocked roads for the camp to prevent migrants entering nearby towns. Many attempted to carry their belongings to the port town of Mytilene, but access was cordoned off. Reports suggest many slept in fields after the fire. EU Home Affairs Commissioner Ylva Johansson said that she had agreed to finance the transfer of 400 unaccompanied teenagers and children to the mainland. So, it's very sad. There's a whole... The article then goes on to explain kind of the backstory, but Greece and refugees and the island of Lesbos have a crazy, horrible story. So, if you want to feel sad, go read about it. What else? Nord Stream 2. Why Germany may pull the plug on a Russian pipeline. So, it was one short sentence in a German Sunday newspaper, but for the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, it was potentially as damaging as an earthquake. I hope the Russians don't force us to change our position on Nord Stream 2, German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said, as the row with Moscow intensified over the poisoning of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. The pipeline's always been controversial. It brings Russian gas directly to Germany under the Baltic Sea, with the aim of providing the country with affordable energy as it phases out nuclear and coal. But critics argue it makes Germany too reliable on energy from a politically unreliable partner. The foreign minister called on Moscow to fully investigate the nerve agent attack on Mr. Navalny, who's being treated in a hospital in Berlin. Otherwise, he implied, axing Nord Stream 2 was now an option. So, very, very interesting. Cool stuff. You can check that out on the BBC. What else? Well, we're getting back towards the U.S., and that's the Bank of Canada. And they've added to QE flexibility. Housing starts hit 13-year record. So the Bank of Canada held its key overnight interest rate steady on Wednesday, but left the door open on possible future changes to bond buying, while a 13-year high for Canadian housing starts added to evidence of economic recovery. So the central bank said that the third quarter rebound was looking to be faster than anticipated, though it noted that as the economy moves from the recovery to the recuperation phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, it will continue to require extraordinary monetary policy support. Bank of Canada said it will continue its large-scale asset purchases at their current pace, but tweaked the language to say the program will be calibrated to provide necessary stimulus needed to support the recovery. So, you know, that is a lot of international news.
They want to hear the music.
Oh, yeah, I hear.
They want to hear the music. They want to hear the music.
Hold on. All right, we're going to go on. Ooh, wow. What happened? That's in red versus the typical other color I see. Anyway, sorry. In COM, you can emote if you type E, and then you usually spits it out. And on my COM, it's always green. If somebody says something with E, it's green. But this one was red, and so then I got confused. So sorry for rebooting while on the air. We're going to hit up a song now. So let's go ahead and let's listen to... So someone I really like, Lauren Bruglia. This is off of The Lighter Side Of. Let's pick one of the shorter songs because we don't want to take too terribly long. Here we go. Here's Polly. This just in. If it's red, that means it's a private message. Press S. So, the more you know. That's right. Welcome back. So let's get into our domestic news. We've only got about 12 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe, and that's on every day at 1930 UTC. Every day, Monday through Monday. No rest for the weary. Guitars and marmots, and sometimes some shrooms, but there's always tea. So check it out. All right, so first up, we've got some semi-international news. Trump has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And surprisingly, I went to all sides because this is definitely a strong bait for headlines. And wouldn't you know it, President Donald Trump has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by Christian Tybring-Gjedde, a member of the Norwegian Parliament. Tybring-Gjedde, I think it's Getty, a member of the far-right Progress Party, lauded Trump for his efforts toward resolving protracted conflicts worldwide, just weeks after Trump helped to broker a peace deal between the UAE and Israel. Oh, yeah, that's cool. So, basically, no left-leaning groups had reported on it when I pulled this story, but it appears that The Guardian has finally put out an article talking about it. But, in general, the right has been talking about how awesome this is and how good Trump is doing compared to Obama. And then the center just kind of mentions, oh, this far-right party nominated him. And then on the left takes it as a slant, saying it's a far-right guy. And the far-right guy is nominating him again for the second time. And apparently he's done this before. So it's a very interesting story. You'll are bound to hear or see more of it unless Trump starts talking about soup again, which is a whole other article. So next we've got here, Biden is throwing something out called, reversing something. Joe Biden said in an interview Sunday that he would not issue a nationwide protective mask mandate if elected president. When previously, let's see how previously, a month ago, he said that he would require a nationwide mask mandate. He said that on the 13th of August, so not quite a month ago. The news only drew coverage. Oh, this is the one that only drew coverage. The news only drew coverage from right and center rated stories on Tuesday night. Business Insider was the only center rated outlet to cover the news, and did so differently than right rated sources, framing the development as Biden's running mate Senator Kamala Harris walking back the plan. Thanks a lot to Zeppi for the graphic. Check that out. Aw, yeah, that's really cool. Thanks, man. So let's go ahead and talk about some more domestic news. Well, I'll give you a couple of headlines because there's some deep thought articles I found. And I think what I'm going to do is I have a Gopher space and I have web space. So what I'm thinking I might do is take my bookmarks that I make for the show. And a lot of times I don't get to all the shows. So I'll just bundle all those bookmarks up into a tiny, tiny URL feed. And then I'll just put it out there somewhere, or I'll post it. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that I get a lot of stories and I don't have time to cover them all. One, Rewire.news has one about the abortion pill and it's safe. So why are the conservatives lying about it? And there's a lot of strong anti-abortion advertising and stuff against this that's kind of interesting. The other one that was cool was The Nation has a story, Why Your Boss Wants You to Love Your Job. And this one, sociologist Jamie K. McCallum argues in a new book that the idea of meaningful work has only persuaded us to work more and more. So kind of giving you an insight into the sociology of your boss. Now, this was one I wanted to kind of read, though. And this is from Labor Notes, a site we referenced a couple, I think earlier this week, maybe last week the first time. Trump Labor Board upends special status of union stewards. So, and you thought it couldn't get any worse. On July 21st, the Trump-appointed National Labor Relations Board eliminated the special legal protections enjoyed by union grievance handlers for the past 70 years. In the interest of promoting workplace civility, the board announced that employers will no longer be restrained from disciplining or discharging stewards or officers who use profanity or engage in other abusive actions in violation of an employer's enforced code of conduct, even when these actions happen in the course of heated meetings with management. The new decision, known as General Motors, overrules scores of NLRB rulings permitting grievance representatives to engage in zealous advocacy. As far back as 1948, the Labor Board announced that the relationship at a grievance meeting is not a master-servant relationship, but a relationship between company advocates on one side and union advocates on the other side. In 1995, the board said some profanity and even defiance must be tolerated during confrontations over contractual rights. So, yeah, abusive action. this is very interesting. And it's definitely worth checking out. There's a Q&A at the bottom. Just in general, and lots of helpful links. So if you are pro-labor or just interested in U.S. labor politics, check out labornotes.org. Our socialist friends, the World Socialist website, bring us back into some more COVID news. The University of Michigan graduate student strike, a significant step forward for workers and students. On Tuesday morning, approximately 1,000 graduate student workers at the University of Michigan went on strike to oppose the dangerous health and working conditions they're being forced to return to on campus amid the surging COVID-19 pandemic. The strike is part of a growing opposition among workers and students across the country who face some same criminal and reckless back-to-work policy being carried out by university and school administrators, major corporations, and both political parties. University of Michigan Graduate Employee Organization members voted overwhelmingly to strike, with at least 80% voting in favor of walkout. This comes despite belligerent intimidation from university administrators who rejected the demands of the graduate student workers. Administrators claim that the strike action violates state and contract law and are preparing to continue operations, including classes. The drive to reopen schools and workplaces has already led to tens of thousands of deaths. Now more than 50 million K-12 students and more than 20 million college students are being forced to return to school in some capacity. And of course it's longer, but that's the gist of the story. Oh, what? I don't know. I'm not seeing something, I guess. Oh, it was the elusive enter key, I guess. Anyway, I'm all over the place. Can you tell I've had 4 cups of tea? I sure do love chai tea. So, anyway. So strong. Oh, this is tea news. I should make a tea news. I wanted to just let you know, I found a Yanshin teapot and a tea pet. So I ordered those off of Etsy. They're on their way from China. So pretty excited. I'll be able to have proper Dahong Pao and Jinjin Mei tea once that gets here. Or once it's a little closer, then I'll order some tea. Because Dahong Pao, if you didn't know, the big red robe, is not cheap tea. 440, Jazzmas enters the chat. All right, we have just about 3 minutes to go in our adventure. See you in a little while, X1. So check it out. Let's run through our headlines before we disappear. The Western U.S. is not okay. Basically, California is on fire. There are some great pictures and a nice story about that on Slate. Also on Slate, North Carolina court wipes out voting restrictions designed to secure white supremacy. Tens of thousands of people are suddenly eligible to vote in November. So they expanded the number of votes eligible, may not disenfranchise citizens who owe fines, fees, and other debts from a felony conviction, the Wake Superior Court ruled on Friday. So this is exciting for them, and exciting for the world, for the country. If you really want to get a good read, check out Neiman Lab. NeimanLab.org, they have Should the Government Use Section 230 to Force the Tech Giants into Paying for the News? And technology in the legislature is always really interesting, and so check it out. It's definitely worth reading. There's some other, like, there's COVID relief bills and stuff like that going on, but check this out. This is a great one to end on. truthout.org. I like those guys. I donated money to them. The House is about to pass marijuana decriminalization. What will the Senate do? If President Trump and Senate Republicans were willing to work with Democrats on just one issue, a bill ending federal marijuana prohibition could finally become law. That's probably not going to happen unless Trump's racist scorched earth re-election campaign drastically changes course. Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris can still challenge the president on a long overdue reform that animates voters. Senator Harris and congressional Democrats are poised to push a historic marijuana decriminalization bill that could begin to address the havoc wreak havoc on communities of color by the war on drugs and force Trump and GOP lawmakers to entrench their positions on cannabis and racialized policing ahead of the election. So how cool is that? I think that's pretty neat. Big sad for all the people on the West Coast. The whole West Coast is on fire, like I mentioned. One of my buddies was in the Bay Area, moved to Oroville to kind of like, he just happened to move to Oroville. And now the fire basically followed them, and now they're about to have to go back to the Bay Area to escape the fire. So, good grief. What a world we live in. But you know what? That's fine. Just drink some tea, read the news, or you can listen to me. I'm here every day, Monday through Friday. Tobe's here every day. And he's coming up in just about, 65 seconds or so. I'm going to end it, though. Thanks a lot for listening. Here's the outro music. Forget to tune in at 0200 hours.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Oh no! We've got 40 seconds. What are we going to do? What could we do? What could we...
I want to hear the music.
Okay. Here, we'll just play some tunes until Tobe picks up.
Time away, you're much more wiser.
just a couple seconds.